Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, America's number one trusted resource for realtors who demand authentic, real-time coaching. Starring award-winning real estate coaches Tim and Julie Harris. Get ready for unfiltered, full-strength honesty about what is truly working to get you into action and make you money in this new real estate boom. Now to our hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
We're joined today by Chris Levitt from Bravo TV's breakthrough reality show, Million Dollar Listing Miami. Chris is an extremely successful businessman in his own right, with honors such as being the top real estate broker at Douglas Elliman, and he holds the national records for property brokerage dollar amounts in certain geographic regions. In 2014, Chris Levitt made four of the top 10 condo sales, pulling in over $120 million in sales last year. Thus, Chris outsold every broker in Florida for condos. Now, let's welcome Chris to the show as we join our host, Tim Harris.
Hey, Chris, I really appreciate your time today. I've been looking forward to this interview. I love your success in Miami. I love, actually, and I, it's one of those guilty pleasure things. We watch all those Bravo shows, you know, like the one you're on. And I have to tell you, the thing that Julie and I picked up on pretty much instantaneously as we watched you in the first season was how much experience you have. So your brief introduction really doesn't touch on the fact you've obviously sold new construction. You've obviously been in this business. You obviously have a great skill set. How long have you actually been selling real estate as a resale agent and as new construction agent?
Sure. So I started in New York City. I don't want to date myself because it's terrible, but I will. In 1996, I was in college in Los Angeles, and I am from Boston originally. Moved to LA to do college. I just wanted to go to a fun, sunny place. And then decided I wanted to move to New York to really get into the high-stakes world of New York City real estate. And I started at 21, and essentially, you know, a lot of people start with being an assistant or being mentoring underneath somebody, but I just went right into it. I was determined, and I did not want to work for anyone. That was not what I wanted to do. So I interviewed with about four different companies: Douglas Elliman, Corcoran, Halstead, and then one tiny little company that really is not a good company at all, who was handling my father's rental apartments that he had in Manhattan, and they didn't want me, but everyone else did. It was really kind of funny because all the big firms wanted me. The little one said I was too young and didn't have enough experience. So I started in resales and did resales all the way through September 2001. Interesting time to change courses. So I, at that point, you know, my business was so affected by September 11th, it was really, really bad. I mean, I had closings that were supposed to close and didn't, to the tune of like $400,000 to $500,000 in commissions that I was counting on. So those did not happen, and I had to switch gears in order to sort of survive, I guess is what they say. And I went into new development. And I did a new development. You know, they hired me immediately because I had so much experience, and then just sort of took off from there. And I did about five buildings for one developer while also maintaining my resale business. And a lot of agents are in resale and they don't, they're in new development. They don't do resale and they've never done it. So I had that nice hybrid where I did both. And then as I was, you know, sort of in September 2001, as I sort of started to get back on my feet, you know, my resale business picked up, and then I was able to really juggle them both really nicely. So that's how it is, and it's been that way ever since. Oh, and then I moved to Miami in 2009.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so I was going to say, so in 2009, you were basically moving to Miami, right, at kind of the middle of the real estate crash. And I remember the headlines across the world were basically that, you know, Miami real estate never will come back, way over supply of condos. And then almost as fast as things seemed to slow down, they sped back up again. So you kind of positioned yourself in Miami at a time that seemed on the surface very risky. But then, wow, is your timing ever perfect? And your background selling new construction was perfect too, because now a great number of the highest end sales in Miami are either new or newish condos. So nice job on your timing on that move, my friend. Yeah.
Thank you. You know, I also lead with, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Please.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, I always sort of, you know, lead with where the universe takes me. I wasn't really planning on moving to Florida. And then, someone who I know who owned the W South Beach said, why don't you come down and sell this project? It's so amazing. And I was like, you know, New York's, the grind is getting to me. The weather's horrible. Why not? Why not give it a try? I can always go back to New York. So that's where it all started.
Well, you must have a fair—you must have a fair number of people that basically have homes in both places, right? I mean, there has to be a lot of, you know.
Oh, it is a total crossover. You know, I'm in New York every week, servicing my clients there, so it is an absolute crossover, 100%.
Well, and Miami also has some of the coolest new developments, the Porsche building and all the others that are getting obviously coming out of the ground. Well, have they started selling that building yet?
Oh, yeah, that's almost done.
I mean, people aren't moving in yet, though. Yeah, but people aren't moving in yet. That was my question. Yeah, that's
no, they're doing that. It's being built as we speak.
Mm-hmm. International clients. Let the listeners know how you cater to international folks, because from what I understand, a lot of the buyers in that building in particular and other buildings, they're Brazilians, they're just Russians, they're Chinese folks, they're obviously Americans. It's an international audience in that particular higher end market. How do you go about attracting those folks to you? Or Chris, does it really just come down to having the listings?
Well, no, it comes down to two things. Having the listings, number one. Number two, really understanding culture, and especially the cultures that are buying in Miami. I took a culture class many years ago about different cultures, and it was extremely beneficial to me because there are different ways to deal with different cultures, and it's really important to know that. And if you respect those customs and cultures with these people, it doesn't matter if you speak their language. They get it, and they'll work with you. Also, you know, having a huge social media base, being on TV obviously helps too. But for those that aren't and don't have that exposure, just really networking and getting to know everyone, you know, just letting the world know that you're in real estate, and then those kind of things will come to you. But when they do come to you, be prepared to know how to deal with these international clients, because they're not easy. They all have different innuendos that you wouldn't know about. And it's important to really know who you're dealing with.
Do you mind sharing with the listeners a story that comes out? Because it sounds to me like you're one of those folks that you could sit and listen to real estate stories until like the cows come home, because you probably have so many great ones. Is there one in particular you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yes. I have a particular, you know, a couple Russian clients, and, you know, they come across cold sometimes and very gruff.
Hey, Chris,
yes.
your cell phone kind of gets janky here and there. So if you could be stationary or something, that would be great. Just here and there, just going in and out. Just so you know.
I'm sorry. Is it working now?
Yeah, it's fine. We can hear you. Just all of a sudden, it starts dropping. So if you're maybe pacing, which I do all day, maybe that's the reason. And
I'm not in the car. I'm in Los Angeles. I'm actually just landed and I'm driving to my hotel. I'm so sorry.
Oh.
So anyway, the you know, Russian people are wonderful people, but they don't always open up to you, and they're not as warm as, say, a Brazilian or an Argentinian. So a lot of brokers just say, oh, they're so mean, I don't want to talk to them or deal with them. But you know what? Everyone I think in the world is soft and nice once you get to know them. So you need to really disengage people from their facades, and that's what I had to learn to do, because I had a Russian client that was not very nice to me. But the minute that I gained her trust, it was smooth sailing. So you have to really, again, know who you're dealing with and know these cultures, because if you don't, you could miss out on opportunity.
What are some of the biggest like nuances, the cultural nuances that you kind of touched on a second ago that would surprise folks, like when dealing with Middle Eastern folks and dealing with, you know, Brazilians, with dealing with, you know, all the different cultures that you deal with all these international buyers? What would be some of the like things that you think would surprise most of our listeners, things that they wouldn't even ever guess would be considered rude in, say, for example, another culture?
Yes, absolutely. And was giving you an example of just because someone's sort of rude and gruff at the beginning does not mean that they're going to soften up and be a great client for you. So just know that every culture has their facade and every person has their facade. So you need to really just disengage. I think if an agent can really learn how to disengage somebody and knock down that facade really quickly, they're a very talented agent and they're going to do well.
Well, one of the things, Chris, I would be interested in your opinion on this. Sometimes culturally, people just, it's not, even if it's the greatest deal ever and the numbers totally make sense, culturally they have to negotiate. It's almost like they can't help themselves. It's impossible for them not to negotiate, even again if they're getting a terrific deal. And unless they're experienced agents, that just drives them batty because they don't know how to deal with that. And I know you
exactly.
must deal with that on a regular basis. So how do you handle that when you have somebody that really, by all measures, is being unreasonable, and that's just their culture? In other words, they just feel like they have to be getting it over on everyone else in the transaction. How do you work with that type of client?
Well, it's every client, and let me tell you, it's not just the international clients. It's everyone. Everyone wants a deal, and everyone will try to get one. So you just need to, hone your negotiating skills and get them the best deal and also make it seem like they're getting something, even if it's a small token, whether it's a developer fee or a credit at closing. Make it seem like you really worked your butt off to get that from the developer or from the seller. Sell yourself and sell your skills and what you did for them. Don't just say, oh yeah, I got you $10,000. You know, make that $10,000 seem like it's $150,000, $200,000, whatever it is. And sometimes that alone will satisfy. I got my client a credit of $25,000. He was ready to walk away, and he was so happy with that because it was the way that I sold it to him.
When you decided to focus on Miami, and obviously you've done an absolutely incredible job, did you decide
Thank
to
you.
Start out saying, I'm going to be the condo guy, or did you just migrate that way?
No, I mean, when I was selling W South Beach, it was a really great opportunity to have that listing, have that building as my listing, and I just became, engrossed in the condo market. And that really is the huge part of Miami. I mean, the housing market is great, but I just love condos. I love living in them. I love also condos with tons of service, and especially hotel condos. So it was really, it was very easy for me to get into that and to sort of bring that to a higher level.
What are the types of, like, the buildings, right? In Miami, and this is happening in really virtually every market that's really focused on condoization, right? I see it in downtown
right.
Austin. I see it in, I mean, Manhattan's crazy right now with new development, as I'm sure you know. Starting to really, take off in L.A., though you're not going to see a lot of towers in L.A. because, the building codes. But what is it, like, people's preferences as far as what they're looking for in a building changes quickly? So if you had developers right now listening in, what would be the 5 years in the future? What is it that people are looking for? What is it that the leading edge buyers are searching for in the perfect condo building?
They want service to the highest degree. That is so important to them. One-on-one personalized service, really sophisticated systems within their apartment for blinds, stereo, contact to the outside world. I mean, they really want high tech and high service. Forget the media room, forget the movie screening room, forget the party room. The amenities are really about spas, gyms, almost creating an oasis when you come home that you don't have to leave.
So you can get
it all done in one place.
You mentioned the service thing. So, right, that's like something that also I'm sure you've adopted to your own, for your own real estate practice, knowing that these folks are looking for a very, very high level of service in the buildings that they buy in. How have you, in your own business practice, how have you catered to that expectation of the highest level of service? What do you do that's
sure.
different,
so
say, for example?
Well, what I do that's different is I'm friends with all the concierges in all the fine hotels. I'm friends with all the managers of all the best boutiques in Design District and Bell Harbor. I make it my business to know what's going on everywhere in Miami. So when my client says to me, Chris, where should I go to dinner tonight? Well, I can tell you can go to Casa Tua, but am I going to be able to? It's one thing to say go to Casa Tua, it's great, but it's another thing to say, oh, by the way, what time do you want to go? Let me make a call. You have to become the concierge as well, because these people don't know Miami. They're coming in here. They're usually visitors, and they're coming here to spend money, and they want service, and they want to get in everywhere. So you better know everyone in town. So you can really wow your clients and say, oh my God, Chris is amazing. He just negotiated this great deal. He got me to make a restaurant reservation where no one else could. That kind of stuff is very important.
Well, you've said a couple of things that are very interesting that I hope the listeners are picking up on. The little tiny things, seemingly little tiny things, make the biggest difference. Because at the end of the day, most high-end consumers who have purchased many, 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 many homes before, they kind of see the service, the generalized service of a real estate agent as a bit of a commodity. And so what you've done is to differentiate yourself, it seems like you've really recognized that and just accepted and even embraced that really to win these guys and continue to win them, you have to go so far beyond what their expectation is that you almost have to be like five steps ahead of what they could possibly ever imagine wanting. So when you start working with a new client, how do you go about pre-qualifying them for expectations, for their, I mean, financing aside, for motivation, for time frame, for what types of questions do you ask to really get into their heads to know whether or not somebody you want to work with?
Right, exactly. What else have you seen? Oh, I just started, you know, okay, great. But have you looked online? Of course they just started because they're only, you know, they started working with me. But have you looked online? Have you seen what's out there? You know, there's so many people that come to Miami without education and thinking they're going to get a three-bedroom for, you know, $2 million on the ocean with incredible views, and it just doesn't exist. So, you know, before you meet that client, you have to have a conversation with them, whether it's even, you know, a pre-meeting for lunch or for coffee, just to get a really good sense of what they want. So then you can go back to the drawing table and sort of curate exactly what they're thinking. Because just to say, oh, hi, you know, I'm Chris, I want to see some apartments. Okay, well, that's great. You have to narrow it down. There's so many different areas. What do you like to do? Do you like to go to the beach? Or are you more of a urban person where you like to sort of, you know, be around the city and then you want to go to the ballet? You know, that would be perfect for them, downtown or Brickell. So what are your likes, your dislikes? What's your lifestyle like? Also, what's great for me with my New York clients is that, you know, I know where they live in New York. I know what exposures they like. I know what sort of features they like in their building. So I can match that down in Miami. So
that's
really
very
getting to know those people before you go out with them. And
so,
don't waste
it's
time.
Way more, it's almost like you're building like a whole profile on them. It's not just a typical pre-qualification. You're getting into the individual preferences of essentially what their lifestyle's like. And then you're trying to match not just the building, but the area of Miami that would best fit that particular, those lifestyle preferences. So that's kind of taking the whole pre-qualification thing to a completely different level. Typically, how long does it take? The questioning, the getting to know you process, how long does that take?
It could take 5 minutes. It could take 20 minutes. I mean, it's depending on how much they open up. But, you know, some people just go, just show me apartments. And, you know, then sometimes maybe you, and then you can do that. And then if you're smart and you know, and you're watching their body language and listening to them, you'll know if that's right. For, you know, the first couple of them, you'll know if they're right or not. First couple of apartments or houses. So I just think it's really being perceptive and listening. You know, we're almost like psychiatrists in a way or therapists, because the more sensitive you are to people's body language and the way that the things that they're saying to you, really need to pay attention. So many brokers have blinders on. They don't listen. They don't pay attention. They're not looking for clues, and they're not looking for these things. And it's really important. And I think I think it's an innate ability that you just have or you don't. I'm sure
well,
it
you
be
said innate ability.
Training, but.
Right. Well, experience, Chris. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, you've done this for so long. You've had so many of these conversations that you probably are operating, I would guess, mostly off intuition at this point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, definitely.
So when you say a feeling,
for sure.
the feeling you get, it's really not just it's the feeling of how they react to the question. It's watching their body language, their pluses and their minuses. And you probably, I bet you could tell within like a minute of meeting someone whether or not they're for real or not. I mean, I bet.
For sure.
How often do you say no to somebody, Chris? Chris, how often do you say no? I mean,
often. I mean, I've fired clients before who were just physically and mentally draining. I mean, I've had to just say thank you, goodbye. You know, from the show, I got a lot of clients that wanted to list with me, and I had to say no because I wasn't really sure what their real motivation was. A lot of people think they are going to be on TV, or they think that I have this magical power because you're on TV that, oh, well, it'll sell because, you know, I can ask $2 million more because he's on TV and he'll be able to sell it. You know, it's like these really crazy notions that people have about their properties. So I only deal with people that are realistic and people who really know what they want to do.
What's your pricing strategy, Chris? I mean, it is what it is, right? A lot of people's egos are going to be wanting to dictate what the price is going to be. And when you're dealing with folks that have substantial means, they're generally speaking going to get their way. So at what point won't you take a listing? Because really, Chris, none of these guys are truly motivated in the sense that they have to sell. For the vast majority of them, if it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So when it comes to pricing,
Ooh.
Do you have a better – go ahead.
Okay, well, the people that puff up the most are the ones that need to sell the most. So
right.
What I mean is that the ones that think their homes are worth so much money and they want this, they want that, I don't need to sell, you know, I've got five houses, those are the ones that are choking usually. And you have to just lay into them and in the nicest way possible, in the most eloquent, classy way, say, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, with all due respect, respectfully, you know, this is not a realistic number that you can get. The marble that you have in your home is from 1988. It's not 2015. People don't want green and pink marble. You know, you have to be very honest and cute and nice about it. But I always say to people, you can never underprice an apartment or a house because the market will bid it right up. So if they think it's worth 3.5, and I really think it's more like 2.9, and I'm wrong, and it's worth 3.2, and we price it at 2.9, you'll get that because you'll have five people bidding at the same time, and you can take the higher, you know, contract, or you can raise the price if you find that people are coming in too high. Too close to your ask. So I always say you can never underprice a property. You can always overprice it, and it's death to overprice a listing because it gets stale, and then, you know, no one wants to look at it.
A lot of agents think, especially when it comes to condos, that the cost per square footage is the most important thing. But that's only partially true. What are the other factors that go into putting the correct price on a unit?
Yeah, what about the outdoor space? What about the exposure, the view? You know, you can't just go by square footage. There's so many more factors. View in Miami, the biggest factor, in my opinion, is a view blockage. On South Beach, it's very hard to get a really open, direct ocean view without some building to the side or to the left or a hotel. So it's that's a huge factor, and that can definitely affect your price per square foot. As can the size of the terrace. Is one terrace bigger than the other? Is one, you know, is it a flow through or just one exposure? There's so many different elements to pricing that you cannot go price per square foot. The only way you do that really is when you're in a building and you're going maybe from like, you know, line to line and they're both equal in their own ways and one has this price per square foot, the other has that. So it's very specific.
That has to be a big challenge dealing with uneducated buyers in your particular market, because a lot of people are going to just try to go off a cost per square foot. So how do you,
right.
I mean, does it ultimately come down to this being a luxury purchase for a lot of your buyers and it's just a personal preference thing? Is that the bottom line?
It is, but you have to prove that value, and you can't say to people, what you don't want to say to a buyer is, you can't look at it like that. Oh my God, that is the worst thing to say that everyone says to buyers. Don't ever tell a buyer they can't do anything. Because they will. If that was me, I'd be like, I can do whatever I want, and I will, and buy, thank you. You know?
Yeah.
So you have to say things you have to be so sensitive, I'm telling you. People get very offended. It's an emotional process to buy and to sell. So whoever you're dealing with better be on your side. They better make you feel important all the time and make you not think that you're nuts.
Well, I mean, Chris, what you're describing
is possible.
What you're describing is the fact that you've become very ego aware, it seems, and you're very sensitive
mm-hmm.
to their egos, and you're not allowing your ego to basically go into battle with their ego. And I'm sure you deal with huge egos all the time, but just listening to you today, you seem to be either you've studied ego, you've just basically come to figure out how it can railroad your success. When dealing with other agents who aren't used to dealing with folks in this price range, and they have, and this is their one big deal is the other side of the transaction with you. How do you manage the other agents, especially if they don't have your experience level? How do you make it so everyone's happy?
You know, sometimes I say to the agent, respectfully, so and so. Let me help you get this deal. Let me help this process happen quicker. why don't you, I mean, this is going to sound bad, but sometimes you have to do it when you just know that there's no hope with this agent. You know, let me talk to your seller. Don't you want to make that $100,000 commission? Yes, Chris, I do. Okay, this is how we're going to do it. I'm going to talk to your seller. I'm going to talk to my buyer. I'm going to get the deal done. Just let me do it. Is that okay? And usually they're like, okay. You know, sometimes you have to step in and take over. And not railroad, but just literally take over the deal to get it done.
How do you
do
that
all the time? Sometimes, go ahead.
How do you do that and balance the other agent's ego, though? If they're worried about basically looking bad in the eyes of their sellers, how are you walking that line? Because, by the way, I have a lot of folks that we have coaching clients in, you know, all the major markets across the country, all the high-end markets, and that's what they all do, right? You have to take the transaction over. But sometimes the person on the other side of the deal, not the actual seller or the actual buyer, they'd be more than willing to deal with you directly. But their agent
right.
is so sensitive to looking bad. So can you share with the listeners
yes.
some strategies that you might have for handling that?
Yes. So if you don't go in and railroad like I just described, the best way to do it is to do it on a conference call. Just say, listen, can we all talk together? And then let the agent lead the call and just say, you know, Chris has this, Chris this or Chris that, or, you know, we have, I could just give her the pointers and walk her through it or him through it. If they just don't want me having contact with their client. And I understand that. And it's usually not typical. Unfortunately for me, I'm very, I don't want to say that we're controlling, but I'm very, you know, I like to know what's going on at all times. So if I see that there's like a weak link, I try to fix that as quickly as possible. So I would just say, you know, you could coach the agent, you know, and just say, listen, this is how we're going to get it done. Call your seller, tell him this. Maybe you want to get me on the phone in case I can add in something to add to that. But that's really, I think that's the nicest way you could do it.
Well, it all comes back down to the fact. Well, the other agent respects you. The other agent certainly knows that you're successful. The other agent has to feel like you're not going to make them look bad in front of everybody else.
Yeah.
And when you have a reputation as stellar as yours is, Chris, that's probably fairly easy to pull off. But listeners, I loved his idea about doing a conference call. Some of you guys struggle with your deals because the other agent, let's be honest, is a little hackish. So in those particular cases, you do have to placate their ego. You do have to make it super clear that you're not going to make them look bad. And even on the conference call, you might even want to go overboard with placating their ego. And then you can get a deal together. That's really the professional's way of doing things. And
or, you know what? I just thought of something I did once. I said, you know what? If I'm on or in a meeting with the client, I say, listen to the buyer. Let's call the other agent, Mark. Okay, so listen, Mr. Buyer. Mark, how could you say it? I respect Mark so much as an agent. You know, we do a lot of deals together. And I just want I want him to get this deal because I like him. You know, something to that effect.
That's great. Yes. No,
you
I
know,
get your point. That's
so
the whole thing.
It goes,
yeah.
Our relationship goes back. Yeah, something like that. And then that makes Mark look great. Like, Chris is going that extra mile for Mark because of their relationship, and therefore that's how this seller is even in the deal, maybe. Something to that effect, I think, would be really the best way to do it. Because honestly, listeners, don't railroad people. Karma's a bitch. Don't be bad. You know, don't be a railroader. I am a railroader, but I do it and people don't know it. So it's different, but don't be obvious about it.
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer that the word manipulation isn't a bad word, right?
Right.
So if ultimately you're doing a little bit of a high-level manipulation that's causing people's egos not to feel bruised and helping a transaction happen, helping people accomplish their goals, there's nothing wrong with that. So
if you're honest and forthright and not shady, then you're good. Whatever, you know, absolutely. That's a really big part of it.
So as we wrap up today's show, I always like to ask the question, why you? What makes you so successful? I mean, good God, man, you've been successful in New York. You basically took, probably without even realizing how big of a risk it was at the time, a huge risk moving to Miami at probably one of the worst times that you could have possibly chosen. And yet, despite that, you've now become one of the top agents, not just Chris and certainly Miami, but you've become one of the top agents in the world. So why you? What makes you so special in a marketplace that's so competitive and so wrought with challenges?
Right, because I keep it real. I'm, you know, very well mannered with people. I also listen to my clients. I give them amazing service. I also make my clients feel important. And quite frankly, that is one of the most important things, is making other people feel important. And they just sort of like melt in your hands in a way, because you just make them feel like you're giving them, making your, even if you have 50 listings, which sometimes I've had, make every client that you have feel like they're your only client. And if you can manage that and do that, and give that kind of service and juggle it, you'll do incredibly well.
Listeners,
and
I hope you are
to look good too. You have to look good. You have to not look like a schlump.
Well, you know, Chris, I didn't have that as a question for you, but dude, that is such a critical point. And you know, Julie and I speak to agents all over the country, and it is so, I don't even want to use the word funny, although it is funny. It's sad. You've done this too, I know. You, especially in Miami, you know, you walk into a room of agents and you can tell who the, you know, 100 agents, you can tell who the agents are that are doing all the business because they look professional. Why is it that some agents resist looking the part?
I'm very passionate about this topic because, you know, I see agents, and I don't mean to be snooty, but I see people like buy, you know, they're in a new outfit every day, but they're all like not nice. They're like kind of low end. Do yourself a favor, you know, go buy one nice pair of shoes that are current instead of five pairs of sort of cheapy shoes. Buy one nice suit, beautiful tailored suit, and you can change it up with shirts from Zara or from H&M. No one would know if they're Zara or H&M. It's the suit, the way it fits. That the way a suit fits on a guy is paramount, because when you sort of, you know, fit into your clothes and feel confident in your clothes, you exude that. An ill-fitting guy in an ill-fitting suit's not gonna exude confidence. He's gonna exude schlump.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, even if somebody's not educated in what you're talking about, right? So even if, let's say, for example, a potential seller or buyer doesn't know, you know, a high-end suit, a Brioni suit, or a custom-made Brioni suit, even better, from, say, something they got at Men's Warehouse, they can tell by how it looks. And, yes, it is a subconscious little breadcrumb that, you know, the guy who looks really good or the gal who looks really good, they must have their act together. It is interesting because in this business, Chris, we generally speaking, our business is done in person. It's done at coffee shops. It's done online. It's done on the phone.
Right.
It's not done in offices. So how you look, how you present, and yes, even what you drive, it really, really does matter. And some people will say, well, I just sell farms. Well, you sure as hell better have some nice $1,500 cowboy boots and a nice hat and a nice pickup
exactly.
truck.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you know what? I'm sorry, but you're living in the dark side if you don't watch TV and see six. I mean, all the shows on HGTV, Bravo, about real estate people. I mean, look at how they dress and how they're watch and learn. You know, sort of that's the thing. I mean, look at magazines of the way that what's current right now. I mean, you have to be in the twilight zone not to know what looks good these days.
There's a subconscious thing going on that you are intentionally not looking professional because you're not comfortable with what might come as a result. Maybe you're intentionally railroading yourself. There could be all kinds of things, because this should be obvious to everyone, Chris's point. So, Chris, listen, I really, really appreciate you being on the show today. I've enjoyed talking with you. I'd love to have you on again. You obviously have a lot of great stories. Keep doing a great job on that show. You really do shine as a professional. How you carry yourself. I know it's, you know, you're contracted, so you can't talk out of church. But I realize a lot of it's staged and all the rest of it. But it's still so obvious that you have a great experience.
No, it's not staged, people. It's not staged. This is, I'm telling you, everything you see, as far as I'm concerned, is me doing what Chris does. So don't think for a second that I'm an actor or anything like that, because that's it.
Oh, no, we know you're not an actor. We've seen you on TV. All right.
Oh, my God. So, Chris, all right, well, that was so much fun. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a ton. Have a great – and we're going to – by the way, we're going to try to get this show featured on Inman News features, and so when that happens, we'll send you a link, Chris. And listeners,
okay.
Watch him on the Bravo TV show, Million Dollar Listing Miami.
Well, watch me also on Fox Business, Bloomberg TV. I also am going to be having a recurring show with Maria Bartiromo on Fox Business News twice a month, which is huge, and that is a worldwide distribution. So that's something also to listen to because it's really educational about the markets around the world.
Fantastic. Chris, I really appreciate your time today. Have a great day. Safe travels, my friend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So like a lot of you, our business is growing quickly. I mean, matter of fact, since the beginning of the year, we have added between coaches and salespeople over 50 people. And one of the constant challenges we have is, like you, communication. So how do we all keep in contact with each other? We have actually upgraded our entire systems to VTech phones. Now, I personally was very fearful of getting into the whole, you know, figuring out what phone system to use. And I was very tempted to even do what a lot of you are probably doing, just say, well, the heck with it, I'm just going to go with the cell phone and use that for everything. But unfortunately, cell phones have a lot of limited use, the dropped calls, the receptions, the audio quality, all that good stuff. That's the reason that we are looking for a really great solution, and we went with VTech phones. And now the wonderful thing about VTech phones, and I'm going to give you guys some more specific information about that now, is that they're just so easy to use. They're just plug and play. You don't need an IT guy. You don't need to call out, you know, your phone guy. It's simple. It's an elegant solution that all of you need to seriously consider, whether it's just you and an assistant, or it's you and your team, or frankly, the VTech 4-line small business phone system might even be perfect if you are working out of your house and use it as your home phone. VTech's new 4-line small business phone system is the perfect solution for small business owners that need to install a phone system that has the qualities and features that they have previously only been available for companies with bigger budgets. The new system is the most affordable and easy to install 4-line system on the market. The 4-line small business phone system components include the main console and the optional of expandable cordless desk sets, cordless accessory handsets, cordless headsets, and speakerphones, allowing the system to grow alongside a business up to 10 extensions. The VTech 4-line small business phone system components are available in stores and online at Office Depot, Office Max, and Staples, as well as online at VTechPhones.com.
This program has been a presentation by Tim and Julie Harris, Real Estate Coaching. For more information on our real estate coaching and training programs, visit our website at timandjulieharris.com. Remember to tune in weekdays at noon for upcoming shows. And until next time, thank you for listening to Real Estate Coaching Radio with Tim and Julie Harris.